Let's go to the UK. Matthew Paris, welcome.
Hello, hello.
Strange times these are. And your Prime Minister, goodness, that was a moment, wasn't it, with his hospitalisation. There are still a lot of questions about how he is doing and his continuing absence, Matthew.
There are a great many questions. If he was as ill as everybody says he was, if he was on a ventilator, as it is said that he was, there's no way that this man can just bounce back after a week or two's convalescence and go straight back into the saddle. He's convalescing at the Prime Minister's country residence, and he has apparently had a telephone call with President Trump, but not yet with most of his own cabinet. And there is a growing feeling in Britain that carrying on with Dominic Raab, our Foreign Secretary, who's the designated deputy Prime Minister, but he hasn't really taken charge. He hasn't been supposed to take charge. He's just kind of minding the shop, that we can't go on like this. And either Boris Johnson makes a surprisingly rapid recovery, and he's looked pretty awful in the photographs that we've had so far. Either he makes a surprisingly rapid recovery, or somebody really needs to take the reins until he's properly better. There's a feeling of no leadership, really, at the moment. You know what it feels like when you're being led by what is plainly a committee and there is no presiding human intelligence there.
There was a lot of debate at the time he was in hospital as to the constitutional role in the absence of a deputy prime minister. I mean, who is actually making decisions at the moment, or at least fronting them?
Well, as we don't have a constitution, there's a serious problem about what's the constitutional role of a deputy prime minister. It doesn't exist. The office is unknown to the British constitution, but it's been a sort of convention on and off over the last 30 or 40 years, that a prime minister would nominate somebody to take over in the case of their temporary absence. But this is different from that. We are in the middle of a huge national emergency. The prime minister has been close to death by some accounts. He is now recuperating. It won't be for quite a while. And we're just at the point now where we're going to have to decide when to come out of the lockdown and how quickly to come out of the lockdown, be it in stages or be it earlier and more. No decisions have been taken. And it's not clear to many people that a foreign secretary who's just kind of keeping the pot boiling, as it were, while the prime minister is away, is in the position to do that.
Let's look at what's happening then, because the other extraordinary aspect of all this is the virtual suspension of democracy in many countries. It's beginning to resume, and the first prime minister's questions, mainly remotely, with some in the chamber. Just explain how it happened.
It was quite extraordinary. I watched that. That was over lunchtime today. A few people in the chamber, of course, keeping the social distancing, which makes actually quite often aren't many people in the Commons chamber anyway, so you don't notice a very big difference. But the deputising Prime Minister Dominic Raab, the Foreign Secretary, was there, and the new leader of the Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer, was there, facing each other across the dispatch box. One or two people in the chamber with questions to ask, but mostly pretty clever IT work, just going over to MPs self-isolating mostly at home in their constituencies all over the country, one after the other, to put their questions to Dominic Raab. And it worked. The technology worked. I hadn't thought that it would. As to what you might call the human atmosphere of the thing, it didn't quite feel like the House of Commons. It didn't feel like a whole lot of rowdy people together, because, of course, it wasn't. It felt like some rather polite questioning. Keir Starmer, who is a lawyer and a good prosecuting lawyer, asked some good questions, but in an inquisitorial kind of way rather than an adversarial kind of way. Now, some would say that's an improvement anyway, but it's certainly a difference.
It is a challenge for politicians, opposition politicians the world over, actually, how to do a very important job, but do it in a way that respects everybody's mood, which is fractious, one would say, and discombobulated.
Yeah,
were you fairly impressed with him?
Yes, I was, and I was fairly impressed with Keir Starmer. I've never been a Labour Party member, but he's a moderate, intelligent, measured sort of man. He lacks a bit of snap, crackle and pop. There wasn't a lot of bite there, but there was an intelligent line of questioning and the right balance between respectfulness and come on. Foreign Secretary, you must surely be able to tell us a little more than that. I thought he got the balance right, and this was a real debut for him as leader of the Labour Party after Jeremy Corbyn. And I think I haven't seen tomorrow's newspapers, but I imagine that it will be thought that he's made a fairly impressive, if quiet, start.
Everybody looking now to how long the world grapples with this and the hope, the hunt for a successful vaccine. We are at the point of human trials, I think, at Oxford with what's happening there.
Yes, the media are alive with rumours about, you know, a vaccine has been found here or we're close to finding a vaccine there or someone else says there won't be a vaccine for another 18 months. But today the news has emerged that an Oxford group have reached the stage of having a vaccine now to test on human beings. Now, as any epidemiologist will tell you, most things tested on most human beings don't succeed in the end. So we're not there by any means. But to have got to the point of testing on human beings where normally these things take years to do is quite an achievement. But who knows? I don't know how it was in New Zealand, but here in Britain there's a very sort of febrile atmosphere, and suddenly somebody believes some big new theory is the answer, or someone else has been proved or disproved, or you know, it's suddenly been discovered that you aren't made immune after all by having had the illness, and rumour flies around, especially with the internet. So I wouldn't exaggerate this Oxford study, but it is hopeful.
You are in lockdown yourself, and I think are you in the countryside at the moment, Matthew?
Yes, I'm in my home in Derbyshire, in the middle of the beautiful Peak District. We too are in the middle of a drought. I've been listening to the problems in Auckland, but a very nice drought. The sun is shining, and I can go for walks because I've got 20 or 30 acres of trees that I've been planting, and so no problem for me. But I think of those people cooped up in council flats, in high-rise blocks in London, with perhaps only one computer for the family to share and a television on loud, and the children are supposed to be learning at home. And in fact, we found that only about a third of primary school teaching children are actually doing the distance learning that they're supposed to be. I think about those people and I just wonder how they can bear it. For me, it's almost like a little holiday.
They are extraordinary times. It's always lovely to talk. Thank you. Matthew Harris is our UK correspondent.